Nowhere is the game of cricket so closely linked to social history than in the West Indies. No other form of Caribbean integration matches cricket for its cohesive force. How has this happened? And how can a region small in terms of population produce some of the greatest players of all time? Hello, I am Michael Holding. Welcome to Sports International and the part 4 in the story of cricket.
Well, our original cricket for the West Indian and the way for the hand man. Call him up some little put together team around the world and talk about them more from test the big WI. I don't tell you. Yeah, where you come from? Where you come from? Where for on? Where for the world?
What style are we come from? Please answer the call.
I've always loved it as a sport because it's athletic, it's balletic, it's almost lyrical actually to watch. You know, great batting, great fast bowling, very, very beautiful to watch actually, yet dangerous. So it has all those elements. But in the Caribbean, it has become almost like a metaphor for social history. It's a very curious phenomenon in Caribbean experience. So this interaction between a game and people and what they do to each other has always fascinated me, actually.
The late Jamaican Prime Minister Michael Manley on cricket's role in Caribbean life. In fact, the term West Indies is one almost exclusively reserved for cricket. Former captain Jimmy Adams.
Cricket and the universe of the West Indies are really the only two entities that all the islands share. Everything else we do as individual countries. We have our own flags, we have our own currency. People tend to sort of lump all of us together as the West Indies or the Caribbean, which I guess geographically is true, but certainly culturally there are huge differences between all the islands, even some of the islands being only a few miles apart.
It's hardly surprising that cricket is such a passion for the people of the Caribbean. It's the only way the whole region can display its emotions, from wild enthusiasm to the depths of despair. Clive Lloyd was captain for my test debut in 1975.
Cricket brings us all together. The West Indies, you know, we're now over 75 years. We've done extremely well for 5 million people, really. I mean, we didn't have that many people years ago, but now we're just over 5 million people. And to be able to bring people together, working under one banner, and cricket more or less is just glued it, you know, that keeps us together. That's the only time we feel as one.
Despite that common bond, there's always been rivalry between the islands to have players selected for the West Indies team. But their common aim is never forgotten, says former test bowler Ian Bishop.
I think there will always be rivalry because you've got territorial borders and each player wants to prove that his island is better than the other one. And I think the memory or the legacy of knowing that cricket is the only unifying force is not forgotten when players get together at West Indies level. It's always at the back of their minds and it makes it easier to come together. Still not perfect harmony, but at least it gets somewhere towards that.
In its early years, West Indian cricket was organized among the schools to which the sons of the plantation owners were sent. By the turn of the 20th century, an intercolonial tournament was in place and teams from overseas regularly toured the region. Having been granted full test status in 1928, we won just 4 of the 22 matches played before the war. But even in defeat, we acquired our own personality and brought something new to the game. That distinctive brand of Caribbean cricket is outlined by Clive Lloyd.
We didn't suppress our natural flair. We just had that ability to hit balls, good length balls for 6 or 4. We chased everything down. Our feeling was really sort of very exciting. We had great fast bowlers, wonderful spinners. So it's all those things, and with people from, as I said, from diverse backgrounds, and having and being able to bring that together, it's quite exciting.
The Second World War cut short the career of the first of the great West Indian batsmen, George Headley. His success from a humble background was highly significant in the development of the game. Cricket in the Caribbean was no longer seen as a sport exclusively for the white elite. Broadcaster and journalist Tony Kozier.
The importance of Headley's eminence in that time was that those who came from his type of background, those who really could not aspire to anything beyond cricket, could identify with him. Headley became a role model for the majority of West Indian people. All of the leaders of the West Indies up until Headley's time, in every area, were whites, were from the elite, mainly from the elite. So Headley there was a role model for those who came from the same background that he did.
You're listening to Sports International on the BBC World Service and part four in the story of cricket. I'm Michael Holding.
In comes Holding on the way now and hits him on the pad. He's out. Leg before wicket, the West Indies have won.
After the war, the West Indies side had far more fighting spirit than its predecessors. The players were no more experienced and came from a more confident background. Although able to dispose of India, Pakistan and New Zealand on a regular basis, we were defeated consistently by England and Australia. That changed on the tour of England in 1950.
Warrell bowls and an almighty sweep, and he's out LBW. Wardle is LBW, snatches a stump, and the players are running off the field. Yes, there are several West Indian players running from the far end, and they're going to escort their team off the field. And they're singing and dancing off the pitch. They've won by 326 runs.
That tour was a successful one, and I think that this is really where the start of West Indies cricket coming to maturity.
Batsman Geoffrey Stallmeyer on the importance of that series win in England. Performances like that became a symbol for the Caribbean's drive towards independence. Tony Kozier again.
After the Second World War, with the West Indies cricket team doing so well, that coincided with the political leaders coming through and saying, you know, we can hold our own also in looking after our own affairs. We have proved to you that we can do it on the cricket field, and we can do it also in every other sphere of life. Politically, socially, we can look after ourselves as we are looking after ourselves on the cricket field.
The three W's dominated the post-war period with Clyde Walcott, Frank Worrell and Everton Weekes batting at numbers 2, 3 and 4. They dazzled the world during the 1950s with a style of play that had everyone excited, sometimes disappointed, but never bored. We had always had a reputation for some brilliant individual cricketers, but it was the captaincy of Frank Worrell that molded the first West Indies team in the true sense of the word. Among them was fast bowler Wes Hall.
Frank Worrell was a great batsman, but I think he was a better leader of men. Previous to his reign as captain, West Indians were more or less described, and aptly so, as a bunch of, you know, very good cricketers. But there was no cohesion in the sides. They were just islanders who came together for 5 months. People of different religions, different political backgrounds, social, economic backgrounds. And therefore, it was very difficult in 5 months to mold the team together. Somehow, Frank Worrell was a man before his time, and he was able to do this very easily.
Even as late as the 1950s, Caribbean societies were still constructed along racial lines. The top positions in West Indies life were filled by the white population. That made Ward's appointment as the West Indies' first black captain a pioneering move. Michael Manley again.
Ward is like a great hinge in Caribbean cricket history. The first black man to be the captain and the greatest captain as a leader of men and as a tactician on the field, and a beautiful bat actually. There are many heroes, but I think Worrell is something very, very special, because to be a great player is one thing. To be a great leader is something else again. And to be the first great leader, I think, is the greatest thing of all.
The assumption that the side could not cope under the captaincy of a black player was to be tested when Worrell took the side to Australia in 1960. He blew that suggestion aside in one of the greatest test series ever. We lost 2-1. But the tour was proof that the black population of the Caribbean could control their own destiny. The cricket team was a metaphor for what was happening in other areas of Caribbean life.
The team under Frank Worrell in Australia in 1960-61 was the most significant team to represent the West Indies, and the most significant contribution that West Indies cricket has made to West Indian social and political development. That team drove through the streets of Melbourne to a ticker tape farewell from an estimated 100,000 Australians, significantly as well white Australians, and singing for "He's a Jolly Good Fellow." When you see it up on the television screens, it still touches West Indians as a very significant moment.
As the era of the three W's drew to a close, a new figure entered the arena destined to become a superstar in his own right. By this time, the Caribbean was on its final step to independence. This was the time of Garfield, or simply, Gary Sobers.
Oh, magnificent shot. He fastened onto that like a panther. Sobers has got him. Round the corner. Spun sharply.
What a wonderful shot.
Sobers has, what a great catch that was. A marvellous catch. Pure reflex there. And look at the joy on Sobers. Now, there's a flashback to the great days.
Who's the greatest cricketer on earth? On Mars? Anyone can tell you.
Sobers was a cricketing genius, excelling at all aspects of the game. Few could argue his claim as the finest all-rounder in modern cricket. His achievements are numerous: a mammoth test record of 365 against Pakistan, and six sixes off one over playing for Nottinghamshire 3 years later.
This is something that has never been done before. Why not just give it a try? You have nothing to lose.
Oh, this is incredible. Now, this is six on the trot's a world record.
And I decided then that I was going to have a go at the six sixes.
And he's done it! He's done it! And my goodness, it's gone way down to Swansea.
By the time Sobers played his final test in 1974, the West Indies were vying with Australia for the tag as the best side in the world. Clive Lloyd took over as skipper for the Tour de India later that year. He added a new professionalism that took us right to the top.
We made cricket exciting, you know. Our fast bowlers were rhythmic and, you know, very devastating. We have this sort of attitude to make it look good and wonderful and exciting. So people loved our brand of cricket because it's not something that cricket was supposed to be pitched. You know, your elbow's got to be right and your foot has got to be there. Your bat has got to be very close to your pad. And we didn't run into the game with others. We just played it as we saw it. And I thought that whenever somebody said you're a calypso cricketer, that you know there was no substance to your cricket. So we changed all of that in the 70s and 80s.
Under Clive Lloyd, we went 29 series without defeat between 1980 and 1995 and won the first two World Cups. The team's respect for itself and the responsibility we bore for the region were always of paramount importance. It was in 1976 we instigated the four-pronged pace attack, our preferred lineup ever since.
Here's Ambrose and Ramprakash.
Bowled by the Yorker.
Marshall bowls and Adams in trouble, and he plays on.
Yeah, but he's bowled him. His leg stump, not right back, cross the middle stump.
That's the record.
And that is a record for holding.
And that one is a nasty one, and he's out caught down the leg side. A very nasty ball indeed, a typical Garner ball.
In goes Ambrose again.
And Headley's bowled, all stumps splattered all over the place.
Jamaica's Courtney Walsh went on to become the world's leading test match wicket taker with 519 victims.
Walsh into ball to a longer picked it in the air. He caught the forward short leg. Courtney Andrew Walsh becomes the leading wicket taker in the world. 435 victims. It is the greatest moment in this long distinguished career. Another great moment in West Indies cricket.
I think the team felt, well, you know, we just need to play well as a team. We didn't get complacent. We knew we had a job to do, but we felt that we had the confidence in ourselves that once we got into the park and everybody played to the true potential and did your bit, we're going to win. That's the feeling we had, and we just felt that no team could beat us once everybody did their bit. It was like, well, we're going to have guys who excel and does a little bit better, but once everybody does their bit, then we're going to do well. And you know, that was the feeling in the camp.
But of course, to win test matches, us bowlers needed runs on the board. 8,000 were provided by the great Antiguan Vivian Richards.
Here he is now facing Woolmer and pulls it down through square leg. This will be a century down to the boundary at mid wicket. Four runs. Richards 102.
I look at myself as being an entertainer with a big crowd, and it gives you a chance, you know, for you to express yourself. And I've always, you know, channeled most of my efforts into making sure that whatever on that particular day that I come up trumps. I love more than to see a packed gallery, because I think my sport can only benefit from what they've seen. And if they see something maybe good from Viv Richards, this is the kind of role I think. This is the sort of pressure I think one puts upon oneself to feel that you are the salesman for cricket, and by going out there and doing it so people can come back and generate that sort of interest through the turnstile.
Carl Hooper made his test debut in 1988 and rates Richards as the best batsman he ever played with.
I think the difference with Viv and a lot of other players is he had this aura, this dominating way when he was out in the middle. Not only was he a great player, but we just sensed the opposition felt for as long as he was there, they looked a bit down, they looked a bit demoralized, you know, as if they didn't want to compete. And the thing about Viv is that once he stayed around at the crease for a while, he would dominate. He was that sort of individual in his mannerisms, everything, you know.
You're listening to Sports International on the BBC World Service and part four in the story of cricket. I'm Michael Holding.
Amos Bold Holding coming too far across.
Richards, along with Gary Sobers, was named as one of Wisden's five cricketers of the 20th century. No other test playing nation had two representatives, and no other has five players knighted for their services to the game. So how can a region with a population of just 7 million produce such talent? Jimmy Adams again.
Because this sport obviously means so much and it's so deeply ingrained in our culture, you're going to find primary schools playing very competitive cricket in the Caribbean. Then it means that even though we have a small population, we have fairly high standards at the different levels. And it is because of those high standards that despite having a small population throughout the islands, we still can put out a quality international product.
When we did lose our first series in 15 years to Australia in 1995, the decline in West Indies cricket was rapid. We lost a further 16 test matches before the end of the decade. Courtney Walsh puts that down to complacency.
It's a part of sports, but I also think probably some of it was taken for granted because the team was so successful. The guys are just going to come out and everybody's going to want to play cricket, and we're going to get a replacement for Viv Richards, Andy Roberts, Michael Olden, Malcolm Marshall, Gordon Green. It's just going to happen. I don't think any infrastructure was put in place that for when crunch time come and the quality is not there, how do we work on it and to get it going and to get the enthusiasm in the game as well.
But win or lose, one thing you can always guarantee about cricket in the Caribbean is a carnival atmosphere.
West Indian Boxing! Where are we going?
We believe in having a good time when we go to sporting events, not just cricket, football as well. And there tends to be a lot of music, a lot of noise, a lot of whatever the local brew is, and it is, you know, obviously West Indians like to see their home team winning, but it's all about having a really, really good time, and there are not as many inhibitions watching the game as you would probably find in places like England and Australia.
One guiding light during that period where the team was in decline was the batting of one Brian Charles Lara from Trinidad. He had made his test debut in 1990. 4 years later, he was holder of the most prized record in test cricket.
And now Brian Lara, absolutely still at the crease, under his maroon West Indian cap, looking up towards Lewis, 365 not out, Lewis bowls in, it's short, he hooks it, and he has broken the world individual test record with a hook before to the mid-wicket boundary. He is surrounded by a ring of joyous fans, a Trinidadian red and black and white flag is prominent, but Lara is buried beneath an avalanche of spectators.
Lara's first spell as captain, by his own admission, was filled with disappointment. But now reappointed, former test bowler Colin Croft believes he has the maturity to succeed.
I think he's taken 10 years to recognize what he means to the West Indies, to every single boy, girl, man, woman in the Caribbean. And this is why I think Brian Lara has been refreshed, if you will. But what he brings now is a definite maturity, a renewed effort to want to win. And the other thing is he's now what you would call a senior statesman. He's about 33, 34, and he's got a very young cricket team around him, and he recognizes now how important he is as an example, and therefore he is going to play well.
Lara finds himself in a similar position to Frank Worrell and Clive Lloyd all those years before. Both took on the team at a low ebb and gradually rebuilt them into world beaters. Lara has started well in his second spell as captain. The whole of the Cricket Mad Caribbean looks forward to continued improvement. Well, that's all from Sports International for this week. Next week, the story of cricket reaches the subcontinent.
Passion in India for cricket is unparalleled. I've never seen anything like it.
It's a religion, both in India and in Pakistan. It's not just a sport.
The West Indies side, of which I was a part, changed the way Test cricket was played. Other nations copied our style of fast bowling. So how might the current all-conquering Australian side have fared against us? From Sports International and myself, Michael Holding, goodbye.
This Caribbean nation is rising fast. A sunbeam cutting through a cloudy past.
I think what both teams do have in common is that both teams have caused the rest of world cricket to stop and take stock of what they are doing. And I think that is a credit to you as a team. The West Indies team in the 70s and 80s had that effect on the rest of the cricketing world. And this Australian team is having the same effect. Everybody's stopping to see what are they doing, how are they doing it. It's a credit to Australian cricket at the minute that the rest of the cricketing world actually use them as a yardstick.
Rally round the West Indies, now and forever. Rally round the West Indies.